Yeah, we are back, coast to coast AM. Let's get back to the phone lines. We had a really interesting first guest. His name was Christopher Langan, and he is the, what the build is the smartest man in the world, 200 IQ. Now, if you missed it, I suggest that you become a Coast Insider. It's the best deal in podcasting, and you can basically listen to all these shows whenever you like, and it's the way to go because. You know, time is what you make it. And when you're driving around and listening to these things, there's nothing better. You can no commercials. It's just straight to the brain. Well, let's go. As I was talking about earlier, let's go to John. Wildcard Line's been holding for a while from Hugo, Oklahoma. Welcome, John, to Coast AM.
Hey, thank you, Rob.
Yeah.
First of all, I really do appreciate you sharing some of your personal story. It's very inspiring.
Cool.
In relation to Mr. Langdon, there is something faster than the speed of light. And I think this was first brought to light by Sem Jossam, the Pleiadian who was in touch with Billy Myers, who explained a lot about how they got here and everything. And she said that there were these Telsian waves, or I may have the word wrong, but some kind of a wave function that they had on their ships, that once they get beyond the speed of light, then travel is instantaneous to any part of the universe. And the only thing that takes time is getting up to the speed of light and gearing back down from the speed of light. But once you're at the speed of light, you can use these other waves to get anywhere instantaneously.
Interesting. Okay.
So that's an answer to that question. Another thing he brought up was a language as being really important from the point of view of the universe. And in regard to that question, I would say that Sanskrit is that language. This is the oldest language in the world. Of course, academia, they have an idea that there's something called Indo-European that precedes Sanskrit, but they've never been able to find really good evidence of it. I would say that Sanskrit is that original language of all the Indo-European languages. And one of the reasons I say that is because it's a perfect language. It's completely phonetic, which means that there is one character for every individual sound, and it's complete in the sense that the sounds that are in the Sanskrit language, the characters, make up every sound that the human voice mechanism is capable of making. So it's complete in every way. In the Vedas, which are the texts that use the Sanskrit language, they refer to it as the language of the demigods, who are the people who run this universe for God. They're not God per se, but they're highly placed individual souls who have gotten to the level of being able to be controllers of the universe, managers of the universe. And they use the Sanskrit language. And all the original Vedas were written in that Sanskrit language. And that language is still current in India. Scholars still use it. They have universities that teach nothing but Sanskrit. It's very complicated. It
Yeah.
takes about 13 years to master the grammar.
Have you studied it?
I haven't studied it.
Yeah.
I've read a lot of the text in English translations,
Sure. But
but.
you're right. It contains some of the most sublime knowledge that has ever graced this planet.
Yeah, it's incredible. The
Yeah.
Mahabharata, for example, is a huge scripture. I have a copy from Ganguly. The Ganguly translation is the best translation. That's a 12-volume translation. Each of the volumes is around 300 pages, and each page is just filled with text, you know, just with translation. There's no actual Sanskrit in the book, so that tells you how big the original Mahabharata really is, but it gives you the real history of the universe and the real story of what's been going on, with the history of the human race, especially recently.
Yeah.
which gets to another of Mr. Langdon's ideas. He has a huge intelligence, and you know, and I appreciate that. But the answer to one of the questions about God, you know, would have a different answer from the Vedic point of view. And the Vedic point of view would say that from the ascending process, you can get to the impersonal aspect of God. You can philosophically figure out that there must be some universal field that's absolute. But, you know, you can't get beyond that. You can't get to the personal nature of God except through the descending process by revelation. So if you want to find out about God as a person, you have to get in touch with one of his revelations, and that could be the Vedas or, you know, on a different level, that could be Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Or you can find out through the sometimes terrifying way of direct experience. Go out into the world, go out into the forest.
Yeah.
And take the hero's journey, mm-hmm. as it's been described by Joseph Campbell. That's what I did. And I am not the same, but there you go. That's probably why I'm here.
You can have revelation. You can get revelation. It's true.
Yeah. Well, great, great stuff, John. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, appreciate it.
Okay, cool. It's open lines, people, and more of your phone calls right when we come back. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. My name is Rob Simone, filling in for George Norrie. And we are in open lines talking about, well, just about anything you can imagine. Well, let's dive right back into the phones. Let's go to, let's see, Tom in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You are on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome.
How are you doing tonight, Rob?
Pretty good, Tom. How are you?
Pretty good.
Cool.
You know, I was going to ask that guy. He seemed really smart, so I'm not going to try to come off, you know, what I mean. Like some people might want to be smarter, but I don't want to. I just, my question would have been, I guess, you know, does people with that intelligence, don't they want to build something, make something? I mean, you know, mechanically, you know, just for, like, say, for meteors, like a meteor was coming.
Hmm.
You know, things like of that nature.
Yeah. Well, remember,
I mean,
you remember,
know, if you're that smart, why don't you build a better planet or a safer planet?
Right. You know,
I understand that you want to be smart, intelligent, and intellectual. I get all that, but I don't get when people have that kind of intelligence, why don't you want to save the planet, you know,
yeah.
help the planet? I don't want to say save the planet because, you know.
You know, be more involved in, I know what you mean. Remember when I asked him about what, if there was any great revelation that he learned, and he told me something. I said, well, how does that help the average person? Like, how could someone bring that into their lives? Or, and he said, yo, I hadn't thought about that. And you're right.
You know,
I would have thought that maybe that would have been part of, what you think about.
Why don't people want to help the planet? I mean, because, you know, we got some hard times coming. So, I mean, especially financially, I mean, and everything else that's going on. I mean, but taking away guns isn't the answer, though, either. I mean, because that's like that one guy called. He was pretty right on the spot with that one.
Yeah. But, you know, guys like him, like Einstein, you know, they're sort of involved in this other world. And, you know, it's hard for us to sort of walk a mile in his shoes because he's literally one out of millions that are like him. So, and, I do think, you know, he has spoken about these things and he does have a foundation to help other kids. So I have to say that he is pretty well engaged in our world. And maybe, you know, it might be unrealistic to think he could fix the world, but I think that, you know, I think he's doing what he can.
Do things like that. I mean, so I hope they're out there listening, and I hope everyone has a really happy new year and pray for the best, I guess. Eh?
Hey, that's good advice. Thanks so much, Tom. All right, let's keep going. We're on a roll here. This is Open Lines. Let's go to, let's see, we talked to, let's go to Alan. Wildcard Line, Springfield, Missouri. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Rob.
Sure.
And to the last caller, I think to answer the question on why there hasn't been anyone really to come out to help is there seems to be an establishment that kind of gets rid of those kind of people. I read in a magazine that there was a fellow that made an internal combustion engine that run on water back in 1947, but the oil companies and the government kind of paid them a visit. You know how that kind of thing goes. Anyway, what I called about was to let you know that over here in Springfield, Missouri, they're setting up cameras along our sidewalks, along Interstate 44. They've been putting these little black cameras up. They're attached to a light pole looking deals.
Okay.
But they've got the cameras at the tops of them, and they put them along 65 Highway and everything. I mean, everywhere around here.
Hmm.
So I figure they're setting up for a martial law kind of thing, or, you know. But anyway, I kind of wanted to get that out in the air. And Benjamin Franklin had a quote that I think it said, "Those who want to give liberty for freedom deserve neither."
Hmm.
And I just want to know how willing we are to give our liberties until there's none to give away. So I'll take myself offline, and thank you again for taking my call.
All right, Alan. And I think he said give our liberty for security. But no, you're absolutely right. We got to really start getting motivated and getting activated. And I just was watching a video of someone filming the TSA agents. And, you know, okay, that's a good battle. And there's so many good battles. I watched so many of these videos of people being stopped along the southern border, and they're asked if they're an American citizen, and sometimes they just refuse to answer, and they say, "Am I being detained?" And of course, they can't hold you because they're not allowed technically to stop you and ask you that. And so many people have these little hidden cameras, and you know, I think that's a really great way. We got to start filming everything and putting it up on YouTube and putting it up on these other websites, and there we're going to force, you know, change and help. You know, people realize that whoever's trying to take away our liberty, whoever's trying to oppress us, well, we're going to find out your name, what you look like, and go from there. So the fact that we all have a camera, a movie camera in our pocket, I think is a huge tool. And we couldn't even fathom that idea 20 years ago. So the people out there that are putting themselves in the front lines, I just have to say, well done. You know, I have to say, studying these ancient civilizations, if you want to have an insight on the mind and the powers of consciousness, this Vedic language, Vedic astrology, the Upanishads, the Vedas, there's so much wisdom wrapped up in them that literally it's enough for a lifetime. And you know, I have to go back to the old quote. I think it was Confucius or the Buddha. No, it was Buddha who said, "Why do you seek more knowledge when you don't pay attention to the knowledge you already have?" And let's face it, you and I, we've heard the great truths, the great stories, the great parables. We know, you know, the commandments, thou shalt do this, thou shalt do not. We know right from wrong, but we don't pull them into our lives. You know, we always think, oh, there's another self-help book that'll help us. So another episode of Dr. Phil or, you know, whatever it is. We think, ah, there's something more that if I could just get that one thing. Well, chances are you already know it or heard it. But for some reason, I don't know, we just have this amnesia that just comes along and robs us of the power of the knowledge that we have all the darn time. All right, well, let's go to Southern California. We're going west of the Rockies for sure. Lydia, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Rob.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi. I had a brief comment and question.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about how the idea of accuracy is constantly challenged by variation, such as personal experience or perspective. Yet it seems that our human community relies on the created idea of accuracy, such as in definitions like good, bad, true, wrong, any adjective, because honestly, any definition has to be essentially based on some kind of accuracy. So my question is, how do you think the layout of our human community would be without giving into an idea of accuracy? How would we function?
How would we function?
So if we didn't give in to the idea of good or bad or wrong or right.
Well, you know, there's a saying that says there's no right or wrong, there's no good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So this idea of what's right and what's wrong is always sort of, you know, brought into our reality once it goes through our filters of where we live, who we are in our society. Because what's right in one world, in one age, is wrong in another. So,
well, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I wanted to give. How do you think we would function if we didn't create these titles, these ideas of anything being good or bad?
I don't think we could function. I mean, if one person lives alone in the forest, fine. Okay. That one person can just do without right or wrong. But when you know you have a tribe, a village, a community. You know, the bigger it gets, I think it's inevitable that the more laws you need, right?
That's true.
You know, it's just the way human nature is.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think?
I definitely agree. I just sort of want it. When I think about it, I think about just some messy, chaotic, I don't know. There would be no structure. There would be no titles at all, you know.
Hmm.
In a way, we wouldn't be able to develop. I mean, we would, but it would probably be a little limited based on someone else's opinion.
Yeah. You know, it's just the nature of a structure of human beings living together requires that there be a consensus for how, you know, society works.
That is very much true.
Yeah, and so you just have to choose which place resonates with you the most. You know, in America, if that sort of construct works for you and you like the way things roll, great. Some people might, you know, want to live in Australia or England or the Philippines or India. You know, they if they have the ability to. But I have to say, America, you know, it's the best thing going for sure. It's not perfect. But it's the best thing going. And I know, I've lived in all these other countries.
What was that?
I said I've lived in all these other countries. I know.
Oh,
from experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, that's a great call. Good question. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. You know, and just, you know, as an aside, there's so much to be angry, to change, to correct, to fix, to cry about this country. But for everything that you can point out, you have to say there's something good, there's something right, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a work in progress. I mean, that's what democracy is, isn't it? It's not pleasant to see how the sausage is made, but once it's made, boy, that sausage sure is good. Wow, I'm getting hungry. Stay tuned. This is Coast to Coast AM. This is Open Lines, and we're coming right back after the break. Yeah, welcome back. Yeah. If you're with us, then you're one of us. This is Open Lines, and we're really just talking about just about anything. We have gone through all kinds of different subjects about quantum physics, life on this planet, and we were speaking with someone who really opened up our minds to this larger reality, you know, where we are, who we are, how we got here, and all the rest of it. And, of course, this is where Coast to Coast audience picks it up from there. And we got a lot of people on hold. Let me just jump in because the people have been waiting a long time. I want to get to some of them in the order which they've been holding. If you want to call in, please do. This is we're going to be open lines for the rest of the evening. Let's go to Jeff on the international line. It's been waiting a long time from Juneau. How you doing up there?
Hi, Rob. Doing fine. A little cold, but it's starting to melt off now.
What's the temperature out there now?
Right now, it warmed up from yesterday. I think it got down to 8 degrees last night, but it's been in the 30s all day today. So we had a lot of snowfall, and it's all mixing with wet stuff now. So we got a little bit of slush, but it's a normal, normal for this time of year.
Well, we're getting it down here, too.
Juneau's in the panhandle of Alaska. It's down in southeast, so it's not up in the interior. Mm-hmm. It's quite a bit colder up there right now.
Well, like I said earlier, 65% of the lower 48 states are covered in snow, so everyone is socked in
now. Welcome to the party. Now you know how we feel.
Oh, we're all cuddled up next to the radio. It's great.
Yeah.
So what's on your mind?
Hey, I wanted to weigh in. I could talk about everything that you've been talking about tonight, Presley, but we don't have the time. But I wanted to, like, use my time really judiciously, if I could use that word.
Sure.
I wanted to, like, weigh in on the caller that brought up Sanskrit.
Yeah.
I think that he was mostly correct, except for when he said that the language is the oldest language in the known world. It is not. It's about the same age as Hebrew, the Abrahamic Hebrew. And here's a way to wrap your head around this. This is all about astrology, and I wanted to just make the point. You're familiar with the whole yin yang thing. You sound like you know about it. I don't have to explain it. The whole idea of duality, the whole yin yang idea, the male female, the left right, whatever you want to.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So, Sanskrit is the esoteric, magical, mystical, mathematical language of the Eastern world. Hebrew is the magical, esoteric, mathematical language of the Western world. If you look in the Bible, in Genesis, I mean, I'm not sure which chapter or verse it is, and everything, but there's a point in there where Abraham and Lot come out of this land called Ur, and they have to separate, and Abraham tells Lot, look east, and everything you see in that direction is yours, and I will look west, and everything I see in that direction belongs to me. Well, Hebrew and Sanskrit, it's in my conclusion that they are the byproduct of dividing. This is where the duality thing comes in. And not only East and West, but the language itself, they used to be combined into a master language. It was like a master thing. It's like male and female. First there was male, and then female was brought out of male. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's as if, this is why if you look through European ancient history back to the time of Jesus and before all of that, well, we have all of these things like tarot cards and witchcraft and hexagrams and pentagrams and all of these things that they thought were, all of these things were coming out of the Kabbalah, which is the third pillar of the Hebrew thing. And if you look at the Eastern world, the Chinese, the Vedic, all of those cultures are all stemming out of that Sanskrit, that part of the duality. So you have an East and a West thing, and when they're brought, the whole symbol of the yin-yang symbol, which is on the Korean flag for people that aren't familiar with it, it's a circle with like an S shape in it. Part of it's black and part of it's white.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little dot of black in the white part and a little dot of white in the first part. This is the duality that I'm talking about. It all comes from a source. Now, if you're a fan of Sitchin and you understand the whole thing about the Sumerians and all that, I'm not going to get into the history of it, we don't have time. But see, this is what the Bible, this is what and the ancient Vedic scriptures and all of those things are, those folks that were at the time witnessing what was going on, and they had the knowledge and they figured it all out, and they said, okay, well, we're going to lay it out. We're going to show what the duality is. And then they realized they were doing it at the time.
Well, so, what happened to this master language?
Well,
does that still exist?
Divided into two, and then those kept going down, and each lower progression is just like it's explained in the Bible about how the cultures go from gold down to iron and clay.
So it's kind of like the master language existed in a place where time wasn't a factor.
The root of that master language would be in my opinion.
And then once it enters into this temporal world, it has to sort of split into a yin and a yang.
I don't know that it's like George brings this up all the time. Yeah, he will ask his guests these questions like why it seems like it was all created this way, and I how could it come to be this way? And I'm just saying, well, you're not really observing something that was planned to be this way. It's just the way it is, and it's been that way for eternity, and it's the way it is, so we're just observing it.
Huh.
It's not that it has to, it's just that it did. That's the way it worked.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Okay, so Sanskrit, Hebrew, these are magical languages. Any other ones that really sparkle for you?
Well, I mean, all of the other ones go back to the original language, and the language that was brought here to the Sumerians from the Anunnaki. Are you familiar with that story?
Sure, of course.
Okay, yeah. Well, and so are most of the coastlanders, so I don't have to get into it. But I believe the master language is what the Anunnaki were speaking.
Interesting.
Or they were using.
And do you think there's any written examples of that survived?
Yes, there's an angelic language that you can find in books that is not, no one knows how to speak it or know how to use it, but they have little samples of how to write it. And it looks like they took little elements of Hebrew, because if you take either Sanskrit or the Oriental languages that came out of it, or Hebrew or the Western languages that all branched off of that, if you go back to the original things on that, the Hebrew is totally a perfect mathematical language.
Yeah.
Only a god could think of that.
Well, I appreciate the call, Jeff. A lot to think about.
You bet. Hey, you're doing a great job. Really like it when you come on to Coast.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Appreciate it. Interesting. Yeah. I like the idea of an angelic language. There's something really kind of inspiring about that. Let's go back to the wild card lines. I don't know. They're treating us really right tonight. Jeff is in Colorado. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi. How you doing, Rob?
Great. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, I wanted to discuss what I think they may use to implement widespread mental health evaluations, and it's called the IAT, Implicit Association Testing. And anyone can go online and take one of these at harvard.edu. And the way they do it is give you a couple of categories and then show you words or images and have you press A or B to place it into one category or another. Now, the weird thing about this test is you can't fool it, and it is so effective that it extracts all your prejudices and preferences and bias and belief systems. And just to give you a couple of examples, they might give you a category like male career and female family, and you'd easily be able to identify words like income and executive or cleaning, cooking, family. But when they switch it up, male, family, female, career, it takes you a half second longer. And that's what they're measuring, is the lag time, how long it takes you to respond, not necessarily which category you place one of these images or words into. Now, one of the amazing things that struck me is, I forget the number, it was either 60% or 80% of African Americans who took the race-based test, which is their most famous one at harvard.edu, came up with test results that show they have associations with white people and good things, and black people and negative attributes. And these people are not self-hating or anything, it's just a matter of being subjected to our culture and
the biases
and ingrained with these biases, right?
Yeah.
And you cannot change your results no matter how many times you take the test. It takes you a half second longer when, say, the category is African-American and wealthy and white and poverty, and they give you words like ghetto or gun violence or drug use.
Well, what do you think that they're using this for, this test?
It'll start out as gun licenses, and then it will expand to everything from a driver's license to a job application or college entry, and it truly extracts your belief systems. Like one guy, he took this race-based IAT every day, and he kept coming up with the same results, and it measures using milliseconds of how long it takes you to respond.
Wow.
And he finally was able to get a reading that changed, and it was because the day before he had watched the Olympics.
Okay.
And in that, they portray African Americans as the winner, the hero, and shine a positive light on them. And through his subconscious, he was able to respond with a time to these things and make these associations quicker.
So
they will be able to detect anti-Americanism.
Right.
If you've lived in America for the last 10 years, even if you say, I don't think Muslims are terrorists, or I don't think Islam is a religion of violence, you associate a turban with a terrorist, even though consciously you may make the effort not to. Subconsciously, it takes you a half second longer to make these associations.
So even the delay in response is somehow recorded.
That is what they're measuring.
Okay.
Exactly,
so you think
the delay.
Yeah, so you think that it's possible that they might start implementing this kind of test for basic services and licenses,
right,
and things. Huh.
Right now we're kind of given this choice of mental health testing, police on every street corner in the movie theaters, shopping malls, and in the schools, or take the guns away. And we're all saying, well, okay, give me a mental health test.
Right.
It's not going to be a psychologist asking you questions about your childhood and your relationship with your parents. It's going to be very economic to implement this on a wide scale, and it is so efficient.
Yeah.
taps your subconscious, and you can't pull the test, so they'll be able to.
Yeah, it sounds like a plot from a movie from Alex Huxley or something, you know. Something
right.
Terrible.
That's where
yeah.
we are right now.
Wow. I appreciate the call, Jeff. Thanks.
All right.
We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Lucy, who had a dream about 9/11 before it happened. And she just had another recent dream about another event. We're going to find out right after this. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're doing open lines. And let's go to Lucy out there in Texas. Evidently, you had a dream about 9/11 before it happened, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir. My name is Lucy, actually. Did you say Lucy?
I did.
Oh, I didn't hear it say. Anyhow, your name is Rob, did you say?
You had a dream about 9/11 before it happened.
Okay. First of all, I wanted to say that because you told us where you came from, it made a world of difference.
Okay.
To how we relate to you.
Okay.
Okay, yes, I did have that dream, and I did speak with Mr. Nori, but I wasn't able to tell the full dream.
Oh.
So it was any time. But where I was in Portland, Oregon, and if anyone's been there, there's a twin tower, kind of we have our own twin towers there. Well, we have a breeze, they're across the street from each other, and we have a breezeway that it's all glass, so you can just see the streets and the cars and the stoplights underneath you.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I just filled out an application, and I was just about to take, it's on the second level, higher level, and I was just about to take the escalator down when I had this immense, just powerful feeling to walk towards the glass. And I really thought I was going to get raptured or something. It was so God. And then I said, what? Are you coming to get me or something? Is it time? You know, and I waited and nothing happened. And then finally, halfway down the escalator, I said, now you stop me. If you want me to go back and you really have something for me, just tell me. Well, anyway,
yeah.
At night, it came.
Okay.
And I saw this airplane, and I was at the exact same place where I was before.
Right.
Right up against the glass. Only this plane was coming towards me. And these spirits that are generally with me, they're angels, and one's on the left and one's on the right. I don't understand it. I don't know why. But they're not allowed to speak to me, but they're there. And the spirit said, that's all I can come up with. Forgive my illiteracy. I'm not a scientist.
It's okay.
The spirit said to me, I think it was the Holy Spirit, and what the Bible refers to as the Holy Spirit. And he said, pay attention to the names on the plane, because they were going all which way. And there were several of them. And they had to take me closer, and it said American Airlines. And I thought, what? And then I looked at the man coming towards me, and it was a yellowish, old, small plane, like a small plane, really tiny plane, maybe, I don't know, four people can fit.
Yeah.
And the man was fumbling he didn't know how to fly the plane. And then he looked up at me, and he freaked out because he couldn't believe I was floating, because I was in spirit, and I was floating. And he looked at me like, and I could read, you know, this thing about Sanskrit. In that realm, you just telepathically understand everything. There's no reason to write anything down. You just, everything is just, you know. It's just like I am that I am. You just, if you are conscious and in consciousness.
Yeah.
And the other person is, or whatever, or you're in that plane, there's no Sanskrit.
Well, according to our first guest, all of what you're describing is certainly possible. He talked about this sort of, you know, reality where time is, you know, kind of an illusion, and things that are happening in the future or the past are all accessible by this field of mind.
Well,
so do you have something that you can tell us about a future event that we can perhaps...
Yes, sir.
All right,
yes,
well, go ahead. Let's get to that, because we don't have
important.
Yeah, go ahead.
Very important to me.
Yes.
In 2003, at the beginning of the year, I generally fast 36 and a half days, representing 265 days. And I don't eat, anyway, I have a fast that I do.
Okay.
Where, and then I get up at 4 in the morning and I just sit and wait, or pray, or whatever the Lord, what I feel God, or I just have to get to my consciousness.
All right.
Who I am.
Okay.
Okay, so 2 weeks into this fast, I had this dream. And you know when you have these dreams, because they're not like the others. It was just like 9/11, that there's a brilliance to it, and it's just profound.
Okay, well, tell us what happened, because we don't want to have a lot of time.
Okay.
So okay.
What happened in this dream, it was like on a Beltway 8 and Westheimer in Houston, Texas.
Okay.
And there were two airplanes. It was a complete silence. I was inside of a strip mall peeking through the window.
All right.
Through this kind of a tear in that sun stuff they put. It's like a plastic, and then you peel it sometimes, and you can see through it. They put it on cars, too, so the sun doesn't burn you.
What'd you see?
When I looked, I saw two planes, and this is, I know there are seers out that are listening to me that will understand this dream, because I don't understand it all. But there was a plane, very small, beautiful, shiny, and it was ours. It was so pointed, and it was like that beaten metal. And the man who came out, his stature was so small, and the plane was small. And then the other plane was parked the other way, just like two cars that had parked, you know, right next to each other, only facing the opposite direction.
Okay.
Only this other plane was big, really large, and it was looked like it'd come out of the warehouse of, you know, I thought.
Well, okay, aside from the description of the planes, yeah, because we don't have a lot of time. Yeah, so what is the pull here?
Okay, here's the pull.
Yeah.
I was told to look and read what was on the name of the man. The big man came out of the big plane.
Okay.
Which represented they were stronger than us. And I thought, what happened to America to make us so ashamed and so weak? He said, the angels or the Holy Spirit just said, don't worry about it. Read what's on that man's shirt.
Okay. Well, you have to tell us. We only got 15 seconds left.
It was United Nations. And another thing, all over the fields, there were people dead.
Hold it there. Hold it right there. I'm sorry. We tried to get it all in. We just got the edge of it. So let's hope that we can avoid that reality. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM. More phone calls when we come back.